This is a Redshirt Geeks special podcast for PsyCon Tampa.
And so it begins.
Files accessed. Transfer of data complete.
Commencing.
On Admiral Kane's fracking orders, we are the Redshirt Geeks.
Redshirt Geeks!
Shooting the proton torpedoes, like, make us go that way.
Redshirt Geeks!
Very bad feeling.
Shut up, Wesley!
Redshirt Geeks!
Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Redshirt Geeks!
Hide behind the mound. Dead bars.
Make it so.
Redshirt Geeks!
I'm Laz D, the Pseudo Kiwi.
And I'm the Defiantly Daring Dave.
And this is part three of a special four-part series on PsyCon Tampa 2014.
Redshirt Geeks!
PsyCon Tampa!
Jack, you know, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us tonight. Obviously, we're just going to give you an opportunity to talk about your time in theater, TV, talk about PsyCon, and pretty much we'll give you free reign to do what you like. You know, ultimately, they asked us to talk to you about what's going on, and we are happy to give you free reign.
Well, that's like, you know, sort of giving heroin to a junkie.
Well, we gave Richard the a free reign, and it ran. I think we ran 45 minutes of him, just him alone.
Yeah, he can do that. It's he and I go a long way back together. It's one of those rare friendships that you find in show business, and most show business friendships don't last that long. But Richard and I met in January of 1970 when we started All My Children together, and we were two completely diverse individuals. You know, Richard was this, well, if you've seen Richard, you see how he dresses, looking like, you know, he's a bum off the street, you know, and he dug around in his shopping cart, you know, for the sleeveless t-shirt. And, but, you know, when I first met Richard, you know, this was this dichotomy, you know, he was this kind of free range surfer kid from California, you know, and I was this prep school Northwestern kid from Southern Connecticut, you know, who was, as Richard told me, sexually deprived. And we were so different that we were never a threat to each other. And I think that's one of the reasons why our friendship has endured over the years. I've always laughed and said, you know, if Richard was the Lone Ranger, then I was Tonto. And we really had diverse ways of working. I came from a theater background, you know, Richard didn't. And when we started All My Children, you know, the big focus was the Phil Tara story, this doomed romance, which was, of course, Richard and Karen Gorney. And then you had Susan Lucci, who was the antagonist. And then I was the person who everybody talked to, and I would go, oh, yes, yes, I understand. So I was sort of the everybody's best friend, which was the part I hated the most. You know, I wanted the controversy. But because of that, you know, Richard and I not only got along in the studio, we got along outside the studio. You know, Richard was living in New York, and I had family in Southern Connecticut, so I used to take Richard out to Southern Connecticut, but I'd have to take him to a store first and dress him. Because you couldn't go out to Southern Connecticut to the country club the way he was dressed. So he always gives me credit for teaching him manners, and I give him credit, as he used to tell me, for taking the prep school stick out of my ass.
I don't think I could have been said any better.
And although our paths have gone separate ways on occasion, we've always remained really, really good friends. And you know, when I guess it was 98 when, you know, he came to me and said, you know, I had this great idea to revive Battlestar, you know, would you help me out? And it was interesting because I thought everybody would come help, and nobody did. You know, I was the only one who came on board with him. And it was a labor of love. I'm sure Richard probably has told you the whole history of that. The only reason they made the new Battlestar was because of Richard. And, you know, the trailer that we made, the Second Coming, which, you know, Richard put all his own money into, and I think he borrowed $500 from me at some point. And but, you know, we did this, and, you know, so many people, so many of the fans volunteered. I think other than, well, yeah, because we didn't, John Colicos came on board and did one small scene, and then he died. But, you know, Richard and I were really the only two professionals on it, and so many of the other parts were played by young actors, untested actors, which was tribute to Richard's, you know, directorial ability at that point. You know, Richard, you know, was starting to become a director and was a fine director. And, you know, if you've seen that trailer, which most people have seen by now, for given the amount of money we had, it was really quite extraordinary.
Well, and also given the time and what should happen, you gotta think that it wasn't until I guess you're well into the, you know, we started into the 21st century that the ability to create Hollywood quality films was available to just about everybody, or, you know, to those who didn't have the budget for it.
Right.
You know, I mean, now anybody with a high definition camera and the right software can do anything. Back then, you really had to know your stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, it is, and I'll come back to this later. You know, I filmed a short film this year, and just looking at the equipment and how this stuff is filmed, I just laughed hysterically. I would go, this is all new to me. This looks like, you know, this looks like Xbox that you guys are filming now. And it is. We'll get to that in a little bit. But, you know, when we started this, nobody was interested. And then Richard and I, and I kind of say sort of on Richard's coattails, we started hitting the con circuit.
Hmm.
And everywhere we showed this thing, people got excited and people wrote in. And, it started as a trickle, and then it became a flood. Tens of thousands of people wrote in. And, you know, when we talked to Universal and ABC and even Glenn in the beginning, nobody was interested. And then all of a sudden, they had this overwhelming influx of mail from people that people went, well, maybe we should do this. And then when the decision was made to do it, I don't know if backstabbed is the right word, but it's pretty appropriate. You know, they didn't give it to the people who started it all. They didn't do what the fans wanted, which was to take Battlestar out. They gave it to Ron, and they basically redid the original series, you know, changing characters from male to female and stuff like that. The original reaction to that from the fan was a huge backlash. But then, you know, they went ahead, and I think what made that program successful was that it had a whole new audience that really had no idea what the original Battlestar was.
Well,
so I think
Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, I mean, you definitely had the following of people that were getting into Battlestar for the first time that wanted to watch something that was new and had no idea about the original series.
Right.
For me personally, it took me forever to watch the new show for exactly the reasons you're talking about. So much was changed from the original that it was really a big turnoff for me. But eventually I did buckle down and watch it and loved it. You know?
Yeah, I did not. I watched a few of the episodes. I watched the ones that Richard was in just really to watch him. And mine really wasn't out of spite or anything. I mean, I used to laugh at the conventions when they asked me which shows I watched, you know, in the science fiction genre, and I said, none of them. You don't watch Babylon 5? No. You don't watch Deep Space? No. Why not? Not my cup of tea. But you did Battlestar. Sure. Yeah, I was an actor, and I was in in the show.
It paid the bills, yeah.
And that was a whole different different gig. But, you know, that sort of thing does not interest me. What always interested me in sci-fi was stuff that I could relate to. I was an X-Files junkie. Conspiracy stuff, you know. And stuff like that. So I mean, like I liked both the original V and I liked the remake. So, you know, I like the stuff, you know, where we're being embedded because, you know, I think anybody with an imagination has to be broad-minded enough to look at, you know, the Milky Way galaxy and then the galaxies outside of that and the breadth and scope of our universe. And I think if we really think we're the only people out there, that's pretty narcissistic. I mean, it's,
it doesn't make
any sense. So, you know, I do like to think that there are other civilizations other than ours, but, you know, I can't get into, you know, the stuff with the long snout and the goofy, you know, the lizard people and stuff. Just don't appeal to me. And also, it's, you know, with Star Trek, you know, I've seen every original one, you know, 15 times. I guess it's a loyalty thing, you know, and, but beyond that.
I can totally understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but I mean, you know, I love, you know, when I was brought on Battlestar, you know, it was a strange thing because I was brought on because ABC liked having me with Richard. Interesting, you know, although Richard's career eclipsed mine in terms of stardom, I always found myself going back and working with him. You know, I worked with him in Streets, you know, when it came out. And then when they asked me to go into Battlestar, you know, as an antagonist, as BoJ, you know, we just kind of fell into it together. You know, those antagonism scenes, you know, when I accuse him of being a pansy and we're always chasing the Cylons around the galaxy. And then, you know, the great scene in the flight bay, you know, where I defy him and, we go out after the Cylons. Those were basically shot in one take. We just had that comfort. Around each other.
Do you still find that with you know, given how well you've worked with Richard throughout the years, that it's just sort of you go hand in hand, that you guys kind of go around the convention circuit together, and you know, not necessarily just for your time with Battlestar, but also the fact, I mean, again, you know. You're a very accomplished theater actor. You know, you've done TV, you've done film. You know, it's sort of the. Do you find that, you know, going around to all these conventions with him is sort of, I guess, just an extension of that 30, you know, 40 year long friendship that you guys have had?
Yeah, I think when I'm with him, I mean, you know, the whole con circuit thing is a different. It's a different experience. I mean, I don't do that many anymore. There's too many newer shows with too many younger, bigger actors. You know, for me to get into these things, I'm way too far down the list. You know, I think you have to be honest enough with yourself to know, you know, if you are viable as a guest. You know, and if they can get the people from Lost and the people from the Strain and, you know, all these newer actors in there, they certainly don't want to see me. And the fact that the show is old now, I mean, I do laugh, you know, we'll get there. This family will come up with their kids and the father must say, oh God, we used to watch you. And then they'll turn to the 10 and the 11 year olds and they say, you know, that's BoJ. And the kid goes, he's too old. And he was looking at it, and the parents are all embarrassed. But, you know, out of the mouths of babes. So, you know, I think, you know, our audience is dwindling. You know, there's just too much new out there and a much younger audience. But, you know, my philosophy in going to the conventions was different from a lot of actors. And I was never above scolding other actors and stuff. Richard and I always thought along the same lines. You are nothing without the fans. You know, your ability to get on a TV show, unless somebody watches that TV show doesn't go. So the producers say, thank you very much, you're fired, and, you know, you go off to your selling shoes or whatever you do on the side. So, you know, I always thought the fans were much, much more important than me being there. And I always had a hard time with actors who copped an attitude at cons. And I would go up to him and say, you know, the only reason you're here is that you ain't working. If you were working, you wouldn't be here. The other reason that you're here is obviously you need to make some money because you ain't working. So these are the people who watched you. These are the people going to come up and hand you X dollars for your picture of when you had hair. And so does it really, do you really have to treat them like these crazy geeks that they are? Mm-hmm. And I just, it really always bothered me. And it's why, you know, my reputation of going to these things was always because I was really fan friendly. And anybody could come up and talk to me at any time. And even if they didn't want to buy a picture, you know, and the questions are all the same. You know, there's really nothing new out there, but it's so important to them. And it's your responsibility, I think, to, if you go, to treat them, you know, the way you would want to be treated. So, like I said, I think I got into most of the conventions that I got into simply because the fans like me.
Well, I mean, you can see that, I mean, you talk about how important it is with the fans. You know, we're helping to promote PsyCon Tampa, and, you know, again, you know, you see the list of guests who are coming to this convention, you know, there are some incredibly talented actors, yourself included, Richard. You know, we spoke to Nikki Klein from the from Battlestar Galactica, the remake, if you like, and you know, we just think that it's so important that if you're going to go to these things, you've really got to reach out and connect with these people because, again, they are the people that sat there and watched it and gave you that opportunity to keep doing it, you know, month after month, year after year. And so, yeah, it's really fantastic. And as a fan myself, you know, I mean, look, I'm a middle-aged man, and I grew up, you know, reruns of Star Trek. I mean, I can still remember being sitting on the living room floor watching, you know, Battlestar Galactica come on TV and hearing the fanfare and being so excited and, you know, seeing Dirk Benedict, you know, Lorne Green, Richard, yourself, you know, all these guys come on TV and being absolutely starstruck with what I was seeing. So, so again, you know, as you said, and I think that's really admirable that when you go to these conventions, it's not just a, well, hey, I'm here because, you know, they've asked me to, or hey, it's an opportunity to make some money or whatever it is. You are there solely to connect with the fans. And
right.
You know, that, I mean, it just, it makes it that much more enjoyable for everybody.
Well, I agree. And it's so funny when people ask me, you know, how are you so at ease with the fans? You know, I would always say, you know, if I had to compare Richard and myself, I would say Richard's a serious actor and I'm an entertainer. And, you know, as you know, although I think I'm a pretty good actor, but my theater background and you know, and my background as an entertainer, as a singer and stuff, I connect well with these people. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you can just tell them a joke. For instance, I mean, Dirk is a wonderful actor. Dirk is not comfortable being surrounded by the fans. If you've ever looked at big stars on Jay Leno or Carson or any of these people and how uncomfortable they are, you know, I can name huge stars that once you get them out of their character and out of in front of the camera, they're just not comfortable. They don't do good interviews. Have you ever watched somebody, well, like a Dustin Hoffman does not come awful, or an Al Pacino does not come off well on a talk show.
Right.
I would come off well on a talk show because I can think pretty much on my feet. So I think it's different. I think a lot of that I attribute to my theater background. You know, one of the reasons, you know, that, you know, I was successful with All My Children was when we started that show. That show was, it was called Live on Tape, but basically we shot the show live. You know, I go back to that all the time because people say, what was your happiest time in show business? And I go back to that. I say, if I could undo one decision in my life, it would be the decision to leave that show. Mm-hmm. I never wanted to. It was circumstances outside my control. But, you know, we were given 46 page scripts, and we had a half an hour to shoot it. So you basically shot that show in sequence like a play. It was very much like theater. And that was because, you know, videotape was brand new in the early 70s. And ABC, you know, today, well, there is no such thing as videotape anymore. But, you know, as videotape progressed, every show had its own tape facility. And so they had, you know, their own ability to do whatever they wanted, however long they needed to do it. When we started, we had 40 minutes of the master ABC tape facility to do a 30-minute show. So unless you screwed it up beyond repair, it went on the air.
Wow. So, okay.
Oh yeah. And so, you know, you had to be able to rehearse quickly, learn your lines quickly, and get out of performance quickly. You know, I had a background in theater and stock, you know, learning one show while you perform another. So I was lucky in that area. There were people fired from that show who were quality actors. One that comes to mind right away, and he's left us now. He got ill early. Bob Urich. Bob Urich. He lasted 3 weeks.
I learned something today.
Could not handle the pressure. Joanna Miles, who played my aunt on the show, was terrified every time we went to tape. Absolutely terrified. She would be sitting there. She'd be all calm and collected, and the sweat would roll down her face so much they'd have to get the makeup person out there. And she was let go from the show, and a year later she won an Emmy for The Glass Menagerie. So you don't win an Emmy for that without being a really good actress.
Right.
But that pressure of having to do it right was incredible. And we were so lucky. It's funny. You call to talk about Battlestar, and I go back beyond that because everything that I learned from Battlestar, I learned doing All My Children. It was a rarity in those days. All My Children was the first daytime show to feature young people. It was the first daytime show to deal with topical political issues. It was an incredible risk by ABC. So the four stars of the shows were Karen Gorney, Richard, myself, and 22-year-old Susan Lucci, who actually, she and I started on the same day and did our same first scene together.
Nice.
In January of 1970, I can still remember part of the dialogue. The last thing she said was, "I'll bet you two Jefferson Airplane albums I can break Phil and Tara up before Christmas." I still remember.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, I mean, now, you don't put four young people who are basically novices, you know, on ABC without giving them somebody to protect them. And that's what was rare about that show. The adults that were on the show were the creme de la creme of daytime. You had Rosemary Prince, Mary Fickett, Ray McDonald, Ruth Warwick, Hugh Franklin, Fra Heflin. These were veteran soap opera stars. And instead of copying an attitude and going, you know, we should be the stars and, you know, let the kids wait their turn, they were there to nurture us and teach us. And they did. Mary Fickett bailed me out more than one time, you know, Ray McDonald. They taught us the ins and outs of this. And the atmosphere on the show was probably, with one exception throughout my entire career, the most pleasant I've ever had. It was a joy to go to work every day, and you know, I miss it. You know, if it was still on the air and they would hire me to go back tomorrow, I'd leave in a second. And
well, do you find that the time that you had doing this? I mean, we see that you do theater work, you know, theater workshops, panels, stuff like that, you know, and you talk about what it's like to be an actor. Yeah, I mean, you've given us a wonderful, wonderful sort of, I guess, cross section of what your career has been like. Do you find that everything you've done sort of when you first started your career, do you find that made it easier for you to be able to pass that, I guess, pass the torch on or pass that wisdom on to other people?
Well, that's my whole thing. I'm such a believer in pay it forward. And having done this, the world of show business and actors and directors in that, it is so cutthroat. It is so dog eat dog. there is so little joy in so many people who are in this industry. And what I really like to do is pass on the joy of it. As a director, you know, I would say to, you know, my cast and say, you will never hear the word no come out of my mouth. I don't believe in it. If you're a car salesman and you're selling Toyotas and you do your best to sell a customer a Toyota and the guy says, nah, that's a piece of shit car. I'm going to go across the street and buy a Honda. Well, you don't take that personally. And now, you know, as an actor, you go out there and you give it all, your all, and you pour your soul into this thing, and somebody turns to you and says, Jesus, you're a piece of shit. Why did anybody hire you? It's a personal attack. And I've never known an actor who's squirrely to begin with, who takes that personal insult well. And there are way too many sharks in this industry who get off on their little power structure where they can turn to an actor and really belittle an actor. I think anybody who is willing to get up in front of somebody else and emote should be encouraged. Mm-hmm. I think, and that goes through all aspects of our life. Basic acting skills and basic dramatic skills, you don't have to be an actor to do that. I mean, we use them in everyday life. And the seminar that I'm going to do down at Tampa, which is entitled, you know, if life, you know, if all the world's a stage, how come I got the crappy part?
I saw that on the website. I saw that and it made me laugh.
It does. Well, you have to have a sense of it, but it really does talk about this because we role play in our everyday lives all the time. So basically we're all actors. And it's fun if you get some of these people up. And you get a guy and a girl up and say, okay, she's sitting in the bar. Go over there and pick her up. Now, you know, the dialogue that comes out, you know, you can giggle at and laugh at it. And I go, well, no wonder you can pick up. You're a crappy actor. Now, let me show you how to do that. But I mean, you know, these communication skills, you know, dealing with a customer, dealing with a boss, dealing with coworkers, dealing with just people in life, there are scripts that we follow in our social strata. And having these skills and being able to be comfortable doing it will get you a long ways in life. And then, you know, you go beyond that to, you know, acting, you know, and we see so many people at these conventions who would love to act, because, you know, they kind of idolize us. And, you know, what I try to do is kind of divide it and find out where their best position is. If you decide you want to go into an acting as a career, you have to know the pitfalls. And, you know, it is incredibly scary. I've often said, you know, in order to be an actor, you really are a narcissist. There is something in you that screams, look at me. Hey, everybody, look at me. And when we really kind of look at that as a personality trait, it's really not high on the list of positive personality traits. He's a show off, you know. Mm. But if it's in your makeup and it's in your blood, then you have to allow it to become a part of you. And that's what I really like to encourage. There's nothing wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with, you know, you being slightly nuts as long as you're aware of it and you can admit it. If you come to this thing in Psycon, the very first part of that seminar is I have people, all right, I want somebody out there to define what an actor is. And it's fun. They say, oh, somebody likes to get up in front of people and do this. And somebody who, you know, likes to portray other characters. And you get them and you put them all together. Then my next line is always the same. So what you're telling me is an actor is somebody whose main ambition in life is to pretend to be somebody else. That's the same definition as a paranoid schizophrenic. So
wrong. Yeah, I was like, how can you not be wrong there? How can you not be wrong?
And that gets live. I'm a paranoid. So I said, it's okay to be crazy just as long as you know it, you know, and then you can deal with it. And then, you know, I love my love of the theater. I come from theater. I would have stayed in theater my whole life, but television was much more lucrative. I mean, it just paid you up. It's a different, not philosophy. It's a different approach to acting. You know, I've always said there are many Oscar-winning performances out there that were flukes. All you have to do on film is get lucky and get it right one time. And it's there forever. In theater, you have to repeat it every night. So, it's why we seem to take great stock and hold in great admiration all the British actors that come over here, right? Yeah. Because they're all theater trained. And in America, we are an instant gratification society, and we instantly take these teenage kids and give them a lot of money and make them stars, and then don't understand why they go off the deep end.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, I think, they need nurturing. You take somebody, who's been auditioning and not gotten a part 10, 14 times and told their lousy 14 times, and then they get lucky, and they get something. Now they're a notable star. Is that person going to treat other people nicely? No, that person's going to be treat other people the same way they were treated. You beat a dog enough times and the dog will bite you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't dwell too much about it. My co-host Dave, had a part of his, growing up, it was around, around the industry types, due to, his father was in the industry. So, being able to, see this, there's definitely a difference between being, being raised to cherish your skills and be humble enough to know that they don't last forever, as opposed to what you say now. Like you said, we're still very much an instant gratification society, and if we just give you something, there's no value to it.
Right. And that's why we're all trying to improve. I was asked many, many times that I think I was a good actor. And if I were totally honest with myself, I think my answer is, yeah, I think finally now I've become a good actor. That's because, I'm 68 and Richard is older than I am. Don't ever let him forget that.
We'll remind him during his next interview, which happens to be tomorrow night.
Oh, absolutely. And you also have to tell him that the main reason Nikki Klein is coming to SciCon is so Richard can't say he's the prettiest.
Okay. I'm going to make a note of this just so I can share it with him, just because I know he's going to love it. I know his personality. He eats that up.
Oh, I know. And that's why, it's why we get along with it, because I can do it to him, and he laughs. But, if I really looked back on my career and somebody said to me, did you think you were a good actor a while ago? I probably would say I was capable, but if I'm totally honest with myself, and I think Richard would probably agree with me, a great many of the performances that I did on television and in film were done not to be the best I could be, but done, don't screw it up, so they'll fire you.
Okay.
Don't get in trouble. Stay on the safe side. Instead of taking the ultimate risk. And a lot of that is because, when you're younger, you got to make money, you got a family to support, you've got yourself to support, whatnot. You can't afford not to get the job. So instead of taking the risk to be as best as you can be, you're going to make sure that you don't do something to screw it up. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a reality of the business. And I know I did it. And I look back and go, I would love to walk on the set for the first day of All My Children back in 1970, knowing what I do now.
You think about it, you say it. I mean, you know that you're doing everything you can to be on the safe side, just to make sure that you're still making sure you get that, get that part or get that paycheck or whatever it is you're doing. But also, what's really important is that it's nice to actually hear somebody who has been in that position admit that and say it freely, because ultimately, there's a lot of ego that goes behind, you know, as you say, you know, in order to be an actor, you have to have some level of ego.
Right.
And if you don't, then you're not going to be very successful. But it is nice. It's nice to hear somebody talk about, in such a candid way about what the industry is like. You know, as an independent filmmaker myself, one of the things that we have to deal with all the time is that there's always this, seems to be this expectation these days that, you're going to get the best simply because you showed up. And ultimately what we want to see is we want to see people giving their best because they were allowed to show up. Mm-hmm. And not so much that, you know, that, hey, we can go with anybody, but more so that, hey, this is an opportunity for you to show us just how good you can be and how good you can make the whole project for us, because ultimately this isn't going to be the only thing we do. And if we like what you do, we want to see you come back. And it's exactly as you said, you know, you're in TV, you get into that situation. You may not be trying to do absolutely the best job you can as an actor yourself, but you are certainly doing the best you can to make sure that the people who are keeping you there want to keep you there.
Right. And that's, you know, and that's a lot of compromise. One of the things I do in directing theater, and again, why I love theater is that theater always tells a story from the beginning to the end every night. So, you know, that progression of that character is complete from the beginning to the end. And again, that's the theater, the part of theater, you know, that I like. In film, you know, and even in television, you have, let's say you have scenes in the living room of a house. And there's a scene in the beginning of the film or the show, there's a scene in the middle, and there's the big climax is in the living room at the end. Okay, well, you're not going to shoot that in sequence. You're going to shoot everything that's in the living room at one time because you're not going to schlep the crew back there. And I've done that many times, and I can't tell. I would probably say 99% of the time, as I looked at the climactic scene that was shot out of sequence way back in the beginning of the show, I look at it and I go, oh, crap, I wish I could go back and do that again. Because, you know, the stuff that leads up to it, you haven't explored yet. And that's, you know, that's the hard part of doing film. And nobody takes, you know, the time to rehearse. I mean, again, going back to All My Children, which was filmed in sequence every day. So you have that continuity, that built. And again, like I said, that's why I've always loved theater. Directing, you know, people say, you know, do you like directing better than acting? And I go, it's different. As an actor, you are primarily focused on you, yourself, your part, and that person's relationship with other people in the cast or the film or not. As a director, you're looking at the overall picture. And it's why I love directing. I love looking at that overall picture and creating what I want the whole thing to look like as a unit. And, you know, then you guide the actors and stuff, and then opening night, the most useless person in the theater is the director. And you're done. You're done. You're like the, you know, the captain of the tugboat that takes the big ocean liner and takes it out under the Golden Gate Bridge and says, okay, you're off. And then I'll sit in the back of the theater and I rock back and forth. I'll be usually with up in the booth, you know, with people, and they'll go, Jack, stop it! You know? And that's the part of me that really wishes I was out there with them. Because when the boat sails, I really want to be on it. And, you know, I've had people say to me, well, why don't you direct and act in the same show? And I don't think you can do that. Mm. You can't. Somebody has to be the captain. And, mm-hmm. you know, there's the captain and the crew, and you can't make the captain a part of the crew. You know, we are all, there's always a better way, you know, and who's going to come up and tell me, you know, why don't you play that scene a little differently if I'm the director? Nobody's going to do that, although it would be nice if they did. I give any actor that I work with absolute leeway and freedom to explore. Now, I will say, you know, of all the plays that I've directed, before we have our first rehearsal, I know exactly what that show looks like. I know exactly how every line sounds in my head. And I know that's the way I want the show to look. Now, the first thing I say to all the actors is, look, this is the way I've laid it out. If you've got an idea that's something better, we're certainly going to try it, because I don't care whose idea it was. If it's better, we're going to use it. And I want the actors to have that freedom. I don't want them stifled to think, well, I better do it the way Jack wants me to do it, otherwise I'll get fired. I don't want that. I want them to feel free to bring whatever they have, you know, to that role. And many times I will say, okay, show me what you want to do, and we'll look at it, and we'll go, and I'll go, yeah, I like that. Do it that way. Now, there's nothing more gratifying to an actor that his own idea is the one that they go with. Now, like I say, having laid out the whole show and I know the way it looks, I will take the antithesis of that and say, okay, let's try it that way. And then we do it, and I say, okay, now you've done it both ways. You know, what do you think? Tell me what you think. And they go, yeah, now that I hear it, I think your way's better. I said, okay, all right, well, we'll do that then. But you've given them, you know, the opportunity. The best way to get an actor to do what you want him to do is make him think it's his idea. And that's the best way to get anybody to do something, is to make him think it's. My wife has told me that for years, you know. She says, you know, I get you to do stuff because I met you think it's your idea when it isn't.
I think that's universal, though. I think,
yeah, and it is. But there's nothing more rewarding. And again, I've dealt with professional actors and I've dealt with community theater actors. And I've always treated the community theater actors like professional actors. I'm not going to, you know, the fact that the term community theater, all community theater is a theater that's done in a community that doesn't pay the actors a lot of money. The quality of the shows can be every bit as good. And I have said endlessly, I have seen full equity productions that I've walked out of, and I've seen amateur theater that I've walked out of, and vice versa. I've seen amateur theater that I thought was absolutely brilliant, and vice versa. And, you know, I look at my record as a director, and there's a couple of clunkers in there, but, you know, most of the stuff that I've directed is broken theater records of attendance. And I'm very proud of that. And I'm very proud that the cast has a great time doing that. See, I'm babbling like Richard. How important is community theater? To me, it's vital. I think if they took a nationwide survey of everybody in the nation who, and asked them, you know, if you could be an actor, would you do it? I think it would be very surprising at how high a percentage it would be that people would want to do this. But yeah. People, you know, you have to look at your priorities in life. And you basically live your life according to priorities. But I tell you, I know so many people who do jobs that they hate. You know, they go to work at 8:30 in the morning. Yeah. And they get through that. You get through that day. Right. And you go home and, you know, you sulk in front of your wife. You kick the dog. And, you know, and you'll hear me say this, too. I know a ton of people who their middle management asshole, you know, middle management up there is like assistant casting directors. They have no power to do anything for you. They only have power to get you fired. I know so many people who are grinding their teeth at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that I can go to them and say, it's okay. Because at 6 o'clock, that person's still going to be an asshole and you get to go to the theater.
Yeah, I suppose ultimately, that's a really, I guess a really good way to look at it. You know, yep. I mean, and again, it's just wonderful to listen to you talk. I mean, we could, you know, let you talk end on end, and I think be absolutely enamored on everything you have to say about what it's like to be in theater or be an actor or a director. And it's just one of these things where it's so refreshing to have that perspective. And, you know, because a lot of people have such an idealized picture of what it's like to be in theater, in film, in TV, in music, whatever it is. They think it's all, you know, rainbows and sparkles and sunshine all the time, but they don't realize how much hard work and how much blood, sweat, and tears goes into making these things happen. And that's why That's why it's, you know, like, again, you know, we talk about where you were as an actor, where you are as a director. You know, it's fantastic just to be able to look at everything because we know the effort that went into where, you know, that you went into to get from where you were to where you are. And, you know, so, you know, I mean, like you said, you give the example of people coming to a convention and the father recognizes you from Battlestar Galactica, but the kids have no idea who you are. It's just really nice to know that, you know, there are still people out there who truly appreciate the work you've done and the effort that it went through to get there. And a lot of times, you know, again, as you know, as a filmmaker myself, and you know, Dave has done acting for me. We understand that there are long days without any real, I guess, reward except the fact that something's in the can. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't see the value of it when you walk away at the end of, when you cut at the end of the day. But when you get back down to it, when you look at the finished product, you're always like, okay, it doesn't matter whether it's the best thing or the worst thing. It's something I did. It's something I poured my heart into. And, you know, regardless of what you think of it, you know, inside me, I'm happy to have done that. So again, you know, it's just, like I said, we can listen to you, to talk to us end on end about this, and it's been fantastic. We're just gonna, you know, we would love to be able to talk to you, more, in a future episode, and, we're just gonna let everybody know that, again, you are gonna be at SciCon Tampa, from, September 26th to 28th, and, I mean, as we sort of talked to some of the other guys, we really wish we could be there. We kind of got into the game a little bit late for this, but we're more than proud to be behind you guys. And we know that the people who come to see you are going to be absolutely. I think it's going to, they're going to be awestruck as to how I guess how human you could put a spin on what you do, and I think they're going to really enjoy it.
Well, thank you. I mean, and I think I can speak for Richard here too. You know, as we both are heading into our seniorhood, I love to inspire people, and I know Richard does too. It's why, you know, he teaches his acting class, and then that seminar I do on theater, it's not the same thing, but it's parallel. It's parallel to it. This, you know, if we can make somebody want to get up and do anything, and I don't care if it's build a birdhouse, create a speech, do anything. If we can make somebody enthusiastic about what they do, then, you know, then our job is done. And that's why it's called paying it forward. And that's, you know, I don't want to stop performing. The reality is there's not a lot of parts out there for the late 60s group now. And what parts there are, you know, the big stars are snapping up. You know, it's I saw this coming, and it's why I kind of walked away from Hollywood in the early 2000s when I saw people with huge names doing parts that I, you know, was doing. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my work, you know, I stopped working a lot, and of course that really grinds on you, you know, and so, you know, there comes a time when, you know, you kind of have to walk away, and I know you guys need to get on. I'll finish with one quick story. I did a short film this year, and it was such a hoot. I've been, you know, just directing so much and acting less and less. And when we do it again, ask me about Death of a Salesman, because that's too long a story. But I got a phone call from a young filmmaker down in L.A. who's a graduate from SC. And he said, this is the thing I'm doing, and we'd like you to come down and play this deranged German art dealer. And I said, well, how the hell did you get my name? He said, well, we're good friends of your son. And we're looking for this, and your son said, well, I know just the guy to do this. So, I mean, this is how you fall into stuff these days.
That's right.
So, I mean, I had to go down, and these people, you know, were really nice. There's no money in these things, but they flew me down. They put me up in a hotel. And, you know, I knew I had to talk in German, you know, and although I don't speak German, I can do things phonetically, but, you know, I have a pretty good German accent. Mm. And this character, and again, it's a short film, it's a 12-minute film, I played this art dealer who comes to the home of this family, and the grandfather's died. The grandfather had been in World War II. There's a whole bunch of stuff in the attic, and they want to know whether or not it's worth anything. And there's weapons, and this deranged German, he finds a Luger that we find out subsequently was Hitler's Luger. So instead of buying it from them, I killed them all, you know. And I won't go beyond that. But, I mean, it was great to play this deranged, you know, character. If it's a German accent, you know, and everyone takes this and, you know, yeah. You know, I'm here with all these young filmmakers, and they're asking me what I want to do. And I go, well, you're the director. And they said, no, you're too experienced. What was really fun was when we really kind of, I scoped him out, I thought he was kind of a Peter Lorre character. And then when we got there and I saw the location and I saw the costume, you know, the wardrobe they had for me, and, you know, it's pouring rain as they open the door and we see them for the first time. And I looked up and I said, okay, we've talked about this and it's a Peter Lorre character and I want to change it all because I said, this idea I have is too good. And they looked at me and I said, Raiders of the Lost Ark, do you remember the Gestapo guy? Mm-hmm. In Raiders, how slimy yeah. he was? What was the first thing you saw when they saw him? It was in the pouring rain. He had this wide-brimmed hat up and, he, and you see the hat come up and you see this evil face and he looks at Karen Allen and goes, good evening, Fraulein. I said, that's what this is. And they all went, holy shit, that's D'Aura. So I said, but let's shoot it both ways. You know, so we did it the Peter Lorre way first, and I knew the other way was better. So it's pouring. Yeah. And the girl opens the door, and I just lifted my head ever so slowly, and the water cascading off the brim down my face. And with this sickly grin, I just said, good evening, Fraulein. And from the back, you hear, motherfucker, that's great. God! and wow. that's how we changed it. And what is so funny was if we could look at it right there, I mean, you know, how things have changed. You know, I remember dollies and Panaflex cameras. You know, the camera here is in a cage that steadies the whole thing. The camera is the size of a, you know, what? A deck of cards. And this person, it's all steadied, and wherever the camera is tilted, it stays, you know, the focus, you know, the level stays the same. And then you go, well, where's the focus puller? And where's all this? They're all in the back standing in front of monitors with Xbox controls. And they're pulling focus and doing all this stuff as you're filming.
Yeah.
And I go, wow. You know, and 5 minutes after you've done it, there's a guy up on the third floor with his computer. He's editing it.
Yeah, it's exactly what it's like.
Yeah, so I mean, that was the education I got from them. What I gave back to them, I think, was the experience and how to make a scene right. And we had, and we're waiting for that to hit the short film circuit. I mean, I've not seen it all put together, but everybody assures me that it's great, and you know, we hope it's called Sons of Guns, and.
All right. Well, that's fantastic. I mean, I'm making
actually notes. Looking at the IMDb page for it right now.
Yeah, it's on there. It's called, you know, in post production. So, but if you get back. So, look, I'll let you. Is there anything specific you need from me, question wise, before you let it go?
No, we're good. Your time has been absolutely fantastic. You know, we've talked way beyond what we had originally envisioned talking about tonight, and that's absolutely nothing wrong with that. We are absolutely I don't want to use hyperbole too much, but we are blessed and we are very privileged to have had you to share that with us. And you know, again. Now, we want to get you back on the show another time and be able to
send me an email. Just send me an email. I mean, I'm as bad as Richard. You've now found two kindred souls, but once you get them talking, you cannot shut them up.
That's
well, then I guess the thing that we're eventually going to have to do is get both you and Richard on the show at the same time.
See, hey, I think that would be inviting two chaotic, unstable elements together, and we've got to do that. We just have to do that now.
But we do, The stuff that we do together. I mean, and again, and last thing I'm going to let you go. When we were at Galacticon 3 in Houston, and you talk about being the fans, you know, the day's over. Everybody, you know, goes their separate ways, and the actors, you never see them again. Richard and I rounded up 65 people and took them to Benihana's. Everybody paid for their own dinner. We took over seven tables at Benihana's, And I don't think that Benihana's has ever been the same. But that's what we do, and, you know, and we just became part of the group. And we had a great time.
I mean, again, it's just this wonderful stories. I mean, we could go on for hours talking about this. Well, thank you very much for your time, Jack. I mean, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you, and we can't wait to do it again. So,
if you don't mind, just send me an email anytime you want to do it before we get there. This is not hard for me to do at all, and if it helps the con, it's great, because the only way we make any money is if people show up and say, "Oh, I want that old picture of you. Please sign it."
Oh, that's perfect. Yeah. Thank you very much again. That's wonderful. And we can't wait to talk to you again.
Okay.
Red Shirt Geeks!
And that's all the time we have for this edition of the Red Shirt Geeks. I'm Laz Deed, the Pseudo Kiwi.
And I'm Disembodied Dave.
And we are the Red Shirt Geeks, where every expendable hero has a home.
The Red Shirt Geeks podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 4.0 International License. Permissions beyond the scope of this license may be available at redshirtgeeks.com.